The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
What's going on, guys? This is Frank Gogol, writer of the 2019 indie hit Dead End Kids and of the Ringo Award-nominated collection Grief. If you've been tuning in, you may have heard my recent interview for my new book, No Heroin. No Heroin asks the question, what if Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a recovering drug addict? It's got vampires, drugs, street fights, and a hard, hard punk rock edge. It's also got a ton of heart. The story follows Kayla, a recovering heroin addict, as she struggles to right the wrongs of her days as a junkie and learns the hard way that maybe not everyone is cut out to be a hero. I wanted to stop by to let you know that No Heroin number one is now up for pre-order. So if you're a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, horror comics, Dead End Kids, or if you just want to check out a dope new book, I really think you'll dig No Heroin. But don't wait. Pre-orders need to be in by the end of April. So you're going to want to head over to your local comic shop and let them know you want to pre-order your copy of No Heroin number one today.
Hey everybody, welcome to this special interview episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. Today I am very pleased to have basically one of the working men of acting, movies, television, you name it, he's done it, comedy, serious, all sorts of things. Today I have Ed Begley Jr. Ed, how are you doing today?
Great, Gabe. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So obviously, the impetus for us contacting you this time is because on one of our recent episodes, we talked about Future Man. And while the decision was split between the guys on the show, some of us liked it. Some of us, you know, weren't as impressed with it, but still got a couple chuckles out of it. We definitely want to know from you, Ed, how did you end up working on Future Man for Hulu?
I went on an interview for Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. I knew them well from Pineapple Express, big fan of both of them. So when I heard about this, I was very, very excited. And then I got the part. I was very excited to audition for it. Some actors don't like to audition. I'm not that guy. I do like to audition when it's good material, which it was with this, in this case, because then you get to play the part. Now, if they want you to do it again in front of a digital camera for pay, that's gravy, but you get to play a part. If you're an actor, you should like acting, and I do. So if I, you know, often agents and managers are saying, he's not going to come in and read. I said, please let me come in and read. I want to have some fun with the character. And so I enjoyed that process and got the part, then heard the incredible good news that I was working with my dear friend, Glenn Headley. So to work with her, and that was her last project, as it turned out. She and I were very close, and so it was a dream to work with her.
So one of my favorite things about your character in Future Man is that, you know, when time, you know, gets screwed up and we get reintroduced to your character kind of over and over, you're the same guy, but different things like are happening in your life, or, you know, different aspects of you are similar or different. You know, what's it like kind of playing the same guy, but also a different guy over and over again?
I enjoyed it. I just was grateful that they didn't want me to keep track of it, you know, with all these different things. You know, I'm kind of a pacifist for a while there. Then I'm a gun advocate, and, you know, I'm like twists and turns when the fabric of time gets warped. It was, you know, they're so clever the way they do that. I just don't know how they kept it all together, but they did. And to work with Josh Hutcherson, I'm a big fan of his. He's a great young man, a fine, fine actor. Eliza Coop and I, we worked together multiple times. It seemed every project I worked on, Eliza was in it, and I was in it with her. And Derek Wilson, I did not know him, but to work with him, we had a lot of stuff together. It was an incredible treat. He's so gifted, you know. And Keith David, for God's sake, you know, so wonderful. What a cast. Haley Joel Osment. I just loved every one of them.
Haley Joel Osment playing the horrible boss is genuinely one of the funniest things I've ever seen, I think.
Great casting. Wasn't that great casting? The first moment he comes on screen playing that guy, you go, just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
Pay it forward to that, you know, the sweet guy playing that less than sweet person, this highly flawed individual, who's brilliant cast.
So, you know, when you're – you've done so many different kind of roles. You know, you've done your serious things. You've done a lot of comedy. You've done film. You've done television. Is there something that you haven't had a chance to explore that you would love to still?
I'm going to give a very unusual answer. I don't know that many people say this. Maybe some do, but I haven't heard it. I have enjoyed every minute. I'm really not looking for any to play King Lear or anything like that. If some opportunity like that comes my way, that's fine. I'll see if I'm up to the task. I don't think I'd ever be up to the task, for instance, of actually playing King Lear, but or Hamlet. You know, way too old for that, obviously. But, I mean, I've loved everything that I've done, and if it ends tomorrow, I count myself lucky. I hope it doesn't end tomorrow. I'm still working at age 70, but I've been working at this point 53 years in Hollywood, you know, and on location outside of Hollywood. So to work over 50 years in any line of work, I don't care if you're a used car salesman, you sell aluminum siding. If you worked over half a century at something and you're still working, you're just a lucky person.
That is pretty amazing. I think the longest I've ever been at any, you know, particular job site is about 3 years. So you're definitely winning.
And you get the best of both worlds with acting, with television and film acting and stage acting. You're doing the same line of work, but you're doing it in different places all the time. You know, you work on St. Elsewhere for 6 years. That's the longest run I've ever had. Now, Bless This Mess for 2 seasons. That's the second longest run I've ever had. Then you guest on 6 Feet Under, and you guest on Arrested Development. You guest on Better Call Saul, do all these wonderful guest shows, too. So I just count myself lucky. I'm not in the same factory all the time, but I'm doing different work and, you know, many other wonderfully different factories.
Right. So I have to ask about some of your guest work. And very specifically, I have to ask about your time on Star Trek Voyager.
Yay!
Because if I don't, I will get yelled at by multiple people that I'm friends with. So I tried to think of a creative way to ask about it. But how was it different to work on Star Trek Voyager, which is like a very serious, like, science fiction show that kind of reflects this, you know, pacifist vision of a future universe, versus working on Future Man, where the future of the universe is effectively an action video game?
That was so exciting. You know, I love the Star Trek series. Each and every incarnation of Star Trek, I was of an age, you know, I was a teenager when the first one came out, was very smitten. I was obsessed with the show, the first one, as many people were, then watched it in reruns, and then all these other wonderful generations came to pass. Star Trek Voyager was a great incarnation of the Star Trek franchise, so I just love doing it, and to have a two-parter like that, to play Henry Starling, that guy that was, you know, evil Bill Gates or something, whatever they based it on. I'm not sure what they were going for, but they succeeded. It was a wonderful, wonderful character, wonderfully layered and textured, where he's this hippie camping out somewhere, UFO crashes, and he goes into the craft, you know, the UFO itself, and finds all this technology and uses it to his advantage. It was, you know, very exciting work. It was funny in some cases, and just to work with Robert Picardo and the whole gang and Kate, and just amazing. Sarah Silverman was in it too. She was a wonderful character in that show too, that two-parter. So it was great to work with Sarah earlier in her career.
She is a hilarious human being for sure.
She's one of the best out there. She's amazing. I love her.
So you had mentioned a little bit about Bless This Mess, which is a season. It's in its second season on ABC. It has like Dax Shepard in it. Obviously, it has you, and it's, you know, kind of a money pit sort of story about a family that moves into a farmhouse that they were willed. Tell me a little bit about, you know, that experience and, you know, that show.
That was another great opportunity that I had to go and audition for, but happily, same situation, great material. I wanted to go in and have fun with it, and I did. So in this case, it was Lake Bell, who I knew, and Liz Merriweather, who I did not know, but I knew of her. I was a big fan of hers, you know, from New Girl. So I went into the room and had fun with the character, and as it turns out, I later learned they weren't at all thinking of my type for that character. I think they were thinking of going younger. I'm not sure what they had in mind for Rudy. but somehow I got the part and was so excited. Then I heard they were trying to get Doc Shepherd to do it and did, and we had a kind of a fun, you know, read together, to, you know, kind of a chemistry read to see how we all got along. And then the incredible news was also Pam Grier was considering playing Connie, to play Constance, and they were so lucky to get her to play that character. I've been a fan and been in love with Pam Grier for many years from a distance. Now I get to work with her up close and personal. It's just such a treat. Every day I look forward to going to the set. I really do.
Man, Pam Grier is such an amazing actress, and I am super jealous that you get to actually just interact with her. She's one of she's one of the actresses on my list that I would really like to interview someday. I love so many movies that she's in.
And the show is not only funny, but it's got a lot of heart. It really is kind of a love letter to the people out there in the heartland of America. And it's kind of also like, you know, besides Money Pit, it's also kind of like Green Acres, this show from when I was quite young, where this, you know, New York couple, kind of like Lake and Dax, they move from New York City to the country and they don't quite know what they're doing, you know, kind of like the characters in Green Acres. And it's very, very funny. I love the show. I love the people who write it, shoot it, produce it. It's just a joyous set the way it was on St. Elsewhere for 6 years. We've had two seasons so far, and I hope it runs 6 years or more because I just love every minute of it.
So having been, you know, in the film industry for 50 years, which is like just such a, you know, seems like such a monumental thing, what are some of the risings and fallings and trends that you see, you know, that really pique your interest? Like, you know, you've done so many different things. What are things that are new and inventive that you see now that you think to yourself, that's really cool. Like, I can't believe I've never thought of that before.
Well, you know, the digital medium affords us new opportunities. You know, the old chemical style of doing films with chemistry and, you know, celluloid, that's pretty much gone now. You know, they're not doing much of that anymore with, you know, Eastman color film and those kinds of Panavision cameras, the film cameras. But I have no problem with that. I like the way the image looks. It's a beautiful image digitally. You can get incredible detail and do incredible things with it in post-production and on set. It gives you a lot of flexibility and freedom, and it's more energy efficient, and it's, you know, less toxic too, without all those chemicals to process film. So there's a lot about it I like technically, but, you know, I just love doing it. I love still working, and I just hope to keep doing it. It's, you know, to be on Bless This Mess for these past 2 years and do all these other shows in between. I was just doing Young Sheldon, which is another fine show, and, Better Call Saul. I was just on that. So I just love roaming around and doing, being an itinerant actor and doing different jobs, you know, when they come up, and working with good people, which I'm a big fan of Better Call Saul. I just love that show.
You know, it's gotta be very satisfying to know that, you know, as you've hit 70, you're still very much so in demand. Like your skills, your, you know, ability to act is something that people want on their shows. Like, is there some kind of, you know, personal satisfaction that you get knowing that your craft has been like honed to a level that even now people are actively seeking out you in roles?
I'm basically just fortunate, Gabe. By that, I mean, I'm lucky that I kept working early in my career, but I really had no idea what I was doing. You know, I really didn't. My dad was an actor, so I went, I want to do that. You know, if he'd been a plumber, I'd probably be fitting pipe now. I wanted to do what my dad did. I went out and interviewed for years. I never got a single day's work. Why? I didn't have any idea what I was doing. Imagine wanting to be a plumber and going, I'll ride in the truck today and I'll do a job there. I'll go, you know, do some plumbing in that house. You have to apprentice, you have to train and learn things. So I finally took some acting classes, and no small coincidence, then I got my first job on My Three Sons. But this business, TV and film business, is a roller coaster. You have to just hang on through the ups and downs. And I had ups and downs, and had to do carpentry work to make ends meet for a while and do other things, and did stand up to make ends meet. And so after 15 years of working as an actor, this is now 1982, I went, you know what, I'm going to move to Atlanta or someplace like it and try to be a big fish in a smaller pond. I'm just not making it in Hollywood the way I wanted to. I'm working, but I'm struggling to make the house payments. You know, why should I put my wife and kids through that? I told my wife, let's put the home in the market, move to Atlanta. I'll try to get a show as a local weatherman or something and eventually get a talk show in Atlanta or some city. We'll see how we do city by city. But this isn't working. If I can't get what I want out of this business after a decade and a half, bling, the phone rang. I said, hold on a second. It was my agent. I said, it's my agent. What's going on? I said, well, there's a show, St. Elsewhere. I said, what is this St. Elsewhere? What are you even talking about? And I went and auditioned for St. Elsewhere. I didn't get the part that I wanted in St. Elsewhere. That was the part of Dr. Peter White, played by Terrence Knox. And a good thing I didn't. They killed him off in the second season, I think. So they threw me a bone, gave me this character that was in, I think, two episodes, Dr. Ehrlich. But then that character really rose to the top and became one of the main characters of the show. So I had 6 wonderful years on that show and just loved every minute of it. So you got to hang on for the ups and downs. And after that, there was some time. I always worked, but there was some slow years there in the 90s. And then it picked up again. Chris Guest put me in Best in Show in 1999. He did that show. And I think it came out maybe the next year, 2000. I can't remember that. But after that, it's just been smooth sailing. Chris Guest really has been such a dear friend. He had me in Spinal Tap. He and Rob Reiner and Harry Shearer and Michael McKean, they're all friends. And they had me play the drummer in Spinal Tap. I was the original drummer in Spinal Tap. So then I was not in Waiting for Guffman, but loved that movie. And so when I got the call from Chris to be in Best in Show, I was over the moon, and I've been very fortunate to work in every movie since with Chris.
That was the Best in Show is the first one of the first movies I ever saw that was like in that mockumentary kind of style, and I had no idea that it was fiction. Like I had just, you know, one of my friends had put it on or something, and as I was watching the film, I was like, this can't possibly be real. And
I know.
It wasn't until the end that my friend was like, yeah, that was definitely acted. I was like, that it's so funny because it seems real but not real in the most amazing way. I love his
movies. His movies are extraordinary. They really are. He you know, he captures a certain reality, a certain something that really is hard to explain. But Chris has a keen eye as a writer, as a director, and as you might know, they just do an outline, you know, there's just a rough kind of outline of the story. And then you finish it up, you know, by ad-libbing different scenes, but it's like a musician playing, you know, being given a chord chart, then riffing from there. So it's really a fun way to work. And I love all that work we've done together, Chris and I, and the wonderful cast he assembles.
So you are clearly not the kind of man to just sit back and relax, take a break. You know, and that's evidenced by you not only being on television and movies all over the place, but also with your company that creates basically environmentally friendly cleaning products. Can you tell me a little bit about Begley Living?
Thank you. Yeah, I have a line of cleaning products, Begley's Earth Responsible products, and it's a line of like soaps and detergents and you know, different countertop cleaners and glass cleaners and pet stain removers. We have a wonderful line of non-toxic products. And so people have really responded to that because we have to use a lot of disinfectant things now, given the predicament that we're in. I understand that, but you want to balance that out by using as much non-toxic stuff as you can, you know, for things you don't need to spray with the disinfectant. You want to keep your house as non-toxic as you can. But of course, keep yourself safe during this pandemic and use, you know, what products you need to for your health and safety.
You know, as we're all like kind of being forced to like confront this pandemic, it obviously affects absolutely every aspect of our lives right now. How are some of the ways that this has, you know, affected, you know, acting and that side of your profession? Like, are you, you know, are shootings getting canceled, like that sort of thing? Like, how has that been affecting you guys?
We're very fortunate. We had just finished shooting on March 2nd. The whole second season, 20 episodes, were done by March 2nd. I finished a few days before that. So we're not like in the middle of things, oh, half an episode or oh, three episodes. We did all of our work that we were contracted to do. So now if we ever start filming again in Hollywood or on location outside of Hollywood, if we start filming again, it's possible we'd get a third season. But for now, everything is on hold, as it should be.
Right.
You know, everybody that I've talked to understands you have to think of people's health and safety and not get out there too soon and then start another wave of people getting very sick and horribly getting lots of these heroic hospital workers, these doctors and nurses and people who clean up the hospitals and emergency workers and ambulance drivers and everybody who are, you know, tending to the sick and putting their life on the line. So you want to be respectful of that and not rush getting back. So I'm happily on hold until such time as it's truly safe to reemerge. And everything stopped, you know, right about when we stopped in early March, maybe a week later, March 9th or what have you. There's a few people filming still then, but not much after that because they knew what was coming. They knew things were going to get real and quick.
Yeah.
So people wrapped up or just wrapped in the middle because it was just too much risk to have people coming together in the intimate act of making TV or film.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you guys wrapped up just in time and that you guys stayed safe because, you know, I'm, like I said, it's affected all of us. It's changed how we do everything. You know, we even record this show remotely, which is something that we've had to transition into. You know, everything's different and everything is strange, but that doesn't mean we don't stop loving the things that we love. It doesn't mean we don't stop getting a chuckle out of a good TV show or, you know, frankly, most of us are probably watching 10 times as much TV as we were watching before. So
probably. I've certainly been watching a lot myself, doing a lot of reading, doing a lot of gardening, cooking with my wife and daughter. My daughter's learned to bake quite well. She's been baking cookies and breads. It's just been a wonderful family experience. So we're very lucky. There's a lot of people out there going through a lot of hardship. So my heart and soul is with them and the difficulties they're going through, people who are trying to just get through the day in hospitals and other places where their lives are at risk. And many people who are going through dire situations who are not out there, you know, protecting us all in hospitals and just hold up in the room, older people, infirm people that are in difficult situations. So there's lots of ways to give. Just check out some of those things online where you can give some money to be of help, to be of service to people who need help and hospital workers and others, emergency workers. So, any, you know, there's lots of ways out there you can investigate to get with, you know, real charities that are not fraudulent. And there's many out there that have been very helpful and everybody should pitch in, I think.
I know we're doing our best to help where we can. You know, we're staying at home and just trying to keep safe. You know, the struggles financially is just something that we'll deal with as it comes, you know.
Right, that's all you can do.
So if you're reading a lot and watching a lot of extra TV, what have been some of the quarantine standouts for you? Anything that you really have been excited about?
The Bill Bryson book about the human body is wonderful. That's just terrific. I've been reading Naomi Klein's book about climate change. It's just great. On Fire. That's a great book. Been reading David Mamet's book, Chicago. I've just been doing a lot of reading lately and, you know, I watched Ozark. I just love that show. I've been watching a lot of really good TV, catching up on movies and TV shows that I've been meaning to get to. I watched the whole season of Better Call Saul. I finished that up just the other night. I've been very lucky to just watch all these wonderful shows and read these wonderful books.
That's awesome. Ozark is really good. I'm a big fan of Jason Bateman.
Me too.
So, Ed, as we're kind of wrapping up, what are some of the things that once the coronavirus has kind of calmed down that we can look forward to you being in?
Well, when things calm down, I suspect, I have no signal about this from the network, but I suspect since the ratings have been good continually for the second season, I imagine if we go back to work, we would get a call to do a third season of Bless This Mess, but I don't know that. But if that doesn't happen, there's lots of other shows that I've been working on over the years that have already, you know, been picked up for another season when that time arrives where folks are doing new seasons. you know, it's very likely I would be called for some of those other shows. I've been kind of a recurring character on. So my heart and soul is with Bless This Mess. I just love that show, and I hope we come back for third season when it's safe to do so. But otherwise, I'm happy to stay here and grow some vegetables and putter around the house and cook in the kitchen with my wife and daughter, and I'm just blessed.
And also, can you tell us how to find the Begley Living cleaning materials? So if people are looking to get into some environmentally friendly cleaning supplies, they can do that.
Thank you for mentioning that, Gabe. You can go to begleyliving.com, or if you don't remember that, just remember my name, edbegley.com. Will take you to the same place. It's linked right through. So edbegley.com will get you there. I mean, we've got lots of non-toxic cleaning products, and they work very well too. They're not just non-toxic, you know, feel good kind of stuff. They really do a great job of cleaning. So check them out.
That's awesome. Well, Ed, thank you so very much for your time and for entertaining us for my whole life. So it's you are one of, like I said, the consummate actors. One of those guys that if I see you in something, I'm probably going to enjoy it. So.
Bless your heart, Dave. You're a dear man. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Thank you so much, Ed.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.